Tonight, new fallout from that terrifying false alarm.
A missile may impact on land or sea within minutes. This is not a drill.
NBC News is inside the command center in Hawaii, where the wrong alert went out, telling millions of people to take cover from an incoming ballistic missile. How did this happen? President Trump pushing back after that vulgar slur uproar.
I'm not a racist. I am the least racist person you have ever interviewed.
Tonight, a new divide over what he said in the Oval Office. Serena Williams revealing a life-threatening scare after the birth of her daughter, her warning to women about a hidden health risk and the importance of listening to your body. An about-face from CVS, what they've just banned in the beauty aisle in their stores, and new labels to alert you. And a heart-stopping rescue caught on camera, a firefighter's heroic catch.
This is NBC Nightly News with Lester Holt.
Good evening from Los Angeles tonight, and welcome to our viewers here in the West. No one should have to go through what the people of Hawaii experienced this weekend, receiving what amounted to a doomsday message, given minutes to find shelter from an imminent missile attack. The words, "This is not a drill," emblazoned on their phones. We now know it was all a mistake. And tonight, the investigation into how it happened centers on a state command center just outside Honolulu, a place NBC's Jacob Soboroff and his team were given exclusive access to just a day before that false alert was triggered, to see the inside of Hawaii's early warning system and to speak to those who sound the warnings, like the one that sent Hawaii into a panic. Jacob remains in Hawaii tonight and has our report.
It was 38 minutes of unimaginable chaos in Hawaii.
This is not a drill.
Hours before the false alarm sounded with a warning of an inbound missile, we had exclusive access to the bunker where it was sent from.
Let me take you to where the show starts.
What do you mean?
This is where the call comes in that notifies us of a ballistic missile launch.
These men are two of 10 Hawaii State warning officers tasked with sounding the alarm in the event of an imminent attack. David Hafner of Hawaii Emergency Management showed us how the system is supposed to work.
They'll receive a call from the Pacific Command that comes in, and they make a decision to activate the statewide siren system.
Where's the phone?
It's right here behind us. This is a...
This one right here?
Yep, this is a encrypted secure phone to the Pacific Command.
The call to that phone from the U.S. military's Pacific Command never came. Instead, the alert was sent out in error, turning Hawaii upside down. Residents, many of whom have been preparing for a potential nuclear strike because of fiery rhetoric between President Trump and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un, put their emergency plan into motion.
We ran and I was totally freaking out.
The Durkin family fled into a World War II bunker in their home.
Started throwing things down into the bomb shelter, and we closed the top, and then we got on our phones and looked for updates.
The state's taken the blame, suspending tests of the system and reassigning the person who pushed the button. That hasn't soothed rattled nerves here.
I sent a message to my grandkids at home, and it made me realize, my God, I could have never seen them again. I was sick to my stomach for at least 2 hours afterwards. I was shaking, and it was scary, very scary.
Now the focus turns to rebuilding the trust of Hawaiians and tourists, many of whom on Saturday were terrified they were living out their final minutes.
Tonight, Defense Secretary Jim Mattis tells NBC News there's no indication that North Korea responded to the false alert. Meanwhile, the agency responsible for it says its employees are now the subject of death threats. That as the governor of the state has penned an open letter to residents and tourists here, apologizing for the panic and vowing it will never happen again. Lester?
All right, Jacob Soboroff in Hawaii tonight. Thank you. Tonight, President Trump is issuing new denials and dishing out a new nickname after the uproar over what he said in an Oval Office meeting about immigration. The president spending a few days at his private club in Florida and insisting before cameras that he is not a racist after a senator accused him of referring to countries in Africa as S-holes. We get more now from our chief White House correspondent, Hallie Jackson.
In a jarring juxtaposition today, as the president's cabinet honors a man who spent his life fighting intolerance, the president himself is battling questions about whether he's racist.
No, I'm not a racist. I am the least racist person you have ever interviewed. That I can tell you.
Donald Trump, ending his holiday weekend in Palm Beach, on his way back from his golf club, passing demonstrators waving Haitian flags. It's more fallout from those Oval Office comments in which the president, during an immigration meeting, reportedly favorably compared people from Norway to people from countries like Haiti. Top Democrat Dick Durbin today is standing by his initial statement that the president, at the time, called African nations S-holes.
When he denied saying it, I felt duty-bound to clarify what actually happened.
That pushback is earning the senator a new nickname from President Trump. Dickie Durbin, he tweeted, totally misrepresented what was said at the DACA meeting. Deals can't get made when there is no trust. The president has new backup from two Republican allies, also in the room, who just last week said they did not remember the moment in question. Now?
I didn't hear it.
I'm telling you, he did not use that word.
Another Republican who was there, Lindsey Graham, would not go that far.
It's pretty embarrassing when you have to take your children out of the room just to report the news.
The trust issue and the collapse of it comes at a critical time when a breakdown in bipartisanship might shut down the government 4 days from now. Republicans need Democrats to cut a budget deal, but some Democrats, digging in, want any deal tied to protection for so-called Dreamers, younger undocumented immigrants.
A majority of my caucus, myself included, we will not fund the government without a DACA deal.
As for MLK Day, for the past 20 years, presidents have done something publicly to honor Dr. King on what's become a day of service. President Trump tweeted today and signed a proclamation Friday, but held no public events before returning here to Washington. He spent time in Florida at his private golf club. Lester.
Hallie Jackson at the White House tonight. Thank you, Hallie. There is late word of a shocking and disturbing discovery here in California. Police finding 13 siblings imprisoned in a home under horrifying conditions. Now the parents are facing charges. Let's get details now from our national correspondent, Miguel Almaguer.
This is the home where authorities say 13 brothers and sisters were held captive by their parents. Inside, several of the children discovered shackled to their beds with chains and padlocks. Tonight, their parents, David and Louise Turpin, are in custody after detectives say their 17-year-old daughter escaped from the home and called 911 to say her 12 brothers and sisters were being held captive in this middle-class suburb, shock and disbelief.
Crazy, you never know who your neighbors are.
When the Riverside County Sheriff's Department entered the Paris, California home, they described foul-smelling surroundings and what they thought was a dozen kids inside. Investigators now say seven of the victims are the Turpins' adult children, ranging in age from 18 to 29. They were so emaciated, they were mistaken for kids.
Who knew that this was going on? I mean, if we had known, we would have turned this in a lot sooner.
Describing the victims as very dirty and starving, they were taken to local hospitals. Their parents were booked into county jail. Tonight, facing charges of torture and child endangerment, their bail is set at $9 million each. Miguel Almaguer, NBC News, Los Angeles.
Now to some terrifying moments off of Florida's Gulf Coast. One woman was killed and dozens of people had to jump overboard when fire suddenly erupted aboard a casino shuttle boat. Our Kerry Sanders takes us inside the chaos on the water.
Everybody get out!
Chaos in the Gulf of Mexico. 50 passengers on a 72-foot casino shuttle cruise boat jumping for their lives. Cotty Culbreth hanging on to a railing in fear of the fire and the chilly Gulf water.
I don't want to burn in this boat, and I definitely don't want to jump in this water knowing I can't swim.
He was celebrating his birthday with two friends who described the panic and the choking black smoke.
This is crazy.
Tropical Breeze Casino said although there were life jackets on board the ship, there was no time to get them on the passengers.
That's all I knew. We had to jump. I really had this hollow, numb feeling, but I knew I had to jump.
This photo shows Rebecca saving her friend's life.
I went to get her, pulled her out the water, and we here.
Survivors credit the captain for restarting the engines and steering the vessel closer to shore. One 42-year-old woman died. 15 people were transported to area hospitals. Sunday, Becker Jandali shot this video from his balcony.
And it was really frightening for everyone. I wanted them to all get out.
Tonight, the Coast Guard and the NTSB are investigating not only what caused the fire, but how the crew reacted during the crisis. Kerry Sanders, NBC News, Port Richey, Florida.
Tonight, an emergency is unfolding in communities throughout the Northeast. A lot of riverfront properties, roads, and highways flooded as ice jams leave way too much water with nowhere to go but over the banks. Now crews are working overtime to try to break up the ice as fast as they can. And here in Southern California, the search and rescue mission has now become a recovery effort of that massive flooding and mudslide disaster. Officials fear that four people still missing in the mud and boulders are now dead. At least 20 others have been identified. Highway 101 between Los Angeles and Santa Barbara remains closed, but reportedly could open in about a week. Tonight, Serena Williams is thanking so many people who responded to her going public with a very private health scare after the birth of her daughter. It was a potentially life-threatening complication for one of the world's top athletes, and her warning is intended to help save the lives of others. NBC's Rahema Ellis has her story.
In a revealing cover story in Vogue magazine, tennis great Serena Williams with baby Alexis Olympia shares her harrowing ordeal.
How you doing, Olympia?
She says holding her baby the first time was an amazing feeling, but the next day, everything went bad. Serena had trouble breathing. She knew it was a sign of blood clots she had suffered before, so she guided her doctors on how to save her life.
Just this idea that somebody like her could experience such a severe complication is, I think, really upsetting to many people and will bring more attention to this issue.
Every year, 50,000 women suffer complications during pregnancy. 700 die. Black women are 3 to 4 times more likely than white women, in part because of higher risk factors, diabetes, obesity, and high blood pressure. Today, Serena posted on Facebook, "I hope my story can inspire a conversation that gets us to close this gap."
I don't understand.
31-year-old Tanisha died giving birth to her second child when her heart stopped after a C-section.
I'm broken inside. I'm broken. Knowing that how much his mom loved him and she's not here.
For me, it's unacceptable.
Doctors say Serena's story is a cautionary tale.
So the point being, know your body.
She knew what was wrong. She kept going at it. And I think that's a really important thing, that we all play a role in advocating for ourselves within the healthcare system.
Tonight, Serena Williams, who raised the game for women in tennis, now hopes to raise the standard of care during one of life's best moments. Rahema Ellis, NBC News, New York.
An important voice on an important topic. One of America's biggest Olympic stars, Simone Biles, now says that she too was sexually abused by a former team doctor for USA Gymnastics. Biles went public on social media late today, hours before a sentencing hearing is set to begin for Larry Nassar. Nearly 100 victims are expected to give impact statements tomorrow in Michigan. She joins other Olympic stars like Michaela Maroney, Ali Raisman, and Gabby Douglas in accusing Nassar, who is expected to spend the rest of his life in prison. High-level talks between North and South Korea took another step forward today, with the North now planning to send a large group of musical performers to next month's Olympics. But why was a member of Kim Jong-un's favorite girl band in the negotiating room? Our Bill Neely has a story tonight from Seoul.
North and South Korea talked music, not missiles, today. One North Korean delegate leads a propaganda pop band. All female, all soldiers, hand-picked by Kim Jong-un, they sing his praises. And they may now be heading for South Korea's Olympics. The talks confirmed concerts by a North Korean orchestra. North Korea is preparing a delegation of hundreds for their trip to the global stage. But only two of them, a figure skating pair, have actually qualified for the Games. Kim Jong-un will use the soft power of culture, of music and sport in the Olympics, to try to persuade a global audience that his country is perfectly normal and just wants peace. Here in South Korea, they're not convinced.
We've been down this road before. We've seen North Korea in cycles of peace offensive, then provocations, and then dialogue, and the cycle just repeats itself.
Kim Jong-un's media blasted the South for suggesting today's Olympic talks were due to President Trump's pressure on the North. We're here of our own free will, they said, not because of American pressure. That pressure, though, on again, as Vice President Pence heads for a summit in Canada to tighten sanctions on North Korea. Bill Neely, NBC News, Seoul, South Korea.
Still ahead, getting real, why big changes are coming to the CVS beauty aisle and the message the pharmacy chain is hoping to send to its customers. Also caught on camera, an apartment building in flames and a life-saving catch. Stay with us. We're back now with a big move by the nation's largest drugstore chain, CVS. The company announcing today that it will ban heavily edited photos from its in-store brand displays and marketing. And it will soon require other companies to do the same with their beauty products sold at CVS, or else face a label alerting customers to the airbrushing and other manipulation. NBC's Morgan Radford has more on the story.
Red carpet perfection and glowing TV ads.
You look beautiful.
Two-thirds of American women say the media sets an unrealistic standard of beauty, which is why tonight CVS says it's time to show the truth, wrinkles and all. The company announcing as of April it will no longer use heavily edited photos to sell its products, hoping to prevent unrealistic body images and negative health effects, especially in girls and young women. This is the digitally altered photo you see most of the time. And this is what you'll see going forward. See the moles on her cheek, the slight line on the left side of her chin, even the stray hairs against the back of her neck.
It's a big win because it removes some of the pressure that girls feel, teen girls especially, to look exactly like the picture in the magazine or at CVS in the beauty aisle.
Business analysts say by boosting women's confidence, CVS may boost its bottom line.
I want to find something, a look that's going to be me. I don't want to see something that's airbrushed and fake.
And when you see a more natural photo, does that make you want to buy their products more?
Absolutely, because then I know that what I'm buying is the real deal.
It's all part of the company's strategy to become a health brand, previously banning tobacco products and offering more nutritious food, hoping that changing the way we feel may change the way we buy.
Everybody out there, be your own self. You're perfect just the way you are.
Morgan Radford, NBC News, New York.
Still to come tonight, this one's a bit of a head-scratcher at first glance. How did this car end up smash into a second story? We'll show you the shocking surveillance video. Shocking news from London tonight, the sudden loss of one of the great voices in rock. Dolores O'Riordan, the lead singer of the Irish band The Cranberries, was found dead today in a London hotel. As of now, her death is only being described as unexplained. The news sent off an immediate outpouring, particularly from fans of 90s rock, when The Cranberries scored a string of chart-topping hits, including Linger, Dreams, and Zombie. Dolores O'Riordan was just 46 years old. Take a look at this dramatic rescue video. It's a father throwing his child to a firefighter below who makes an amazing life-saving catch. The family was trapped and had to escape from a third-story balcony when their apartment building erupted in flames outside Atlanta earlier this month. The child, one of several thrown to safety, fire officials say they were, quote, catching babies like footballs. And another jaw-dropping moment caught on camera. Surveillance video showing a speeding car hitting a median and going airborne, smashing into the second story of a building in Southern California. The car became lodged in the building. Two people in the vehicle had just minor injuries. Police say the driver admitted to using narcotics. We appreciate you spending part of your evening with us. That is nightly news for this Monday night, Martin Luther King Day. I'm Lester Holt. For all of us at NBC News, thank you for watching and good night.